Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It's The Rant. I'm Jeff. It's Thursday, July 18th.
And boom goes the dynamite.
Boom goes the dynamite indeed. Back for another podcast here. Today's show, we're going to break down the Detroit Lions, Denver Broncos. Actually doing it Denver first, but whatever. What do you care? You're going to hear anyway. Fantasy football previews for them. Got a couple emails to get into as well from you guys at the end of the show. Going to dive right into it. We're going to start with the Denver Broncos, a team in transition this year because, well, they moved on from Russell Wilson. You might have heard of that. The unceremonious departure there, and now he's in Pittsburgh, even though Denver's paying most of his salary for this season. But regardless, they go out there and they draft Bo Nix, which was, well, at the time for some of us, maybe a surprise. Now, I did actually mock Bo Nix to them in my third mock, not the one I submitted for accuracy. I think I did pretty good in accuracy this year, but regardless, beside the point, I didn't think when it was all said and done, the week of the draft, day one, Thursday in late April, that they were going to go in that direction, but they did. So they bring in Bo Nix. I'll talk about the quarterback situation in a moment with Russ out. Jerry Jeudy is also out. Obviously, he's in Cleveland now. They drafted Troy Franklin, who was Bo Nix's boy for the last 2 years in Oregon. They also brought in Josh Reynolds, and they drafted Audric Estime. So it's an interesting team on paper, but a lot of it really does depend on that quarterback spot. Now, there are certain rookie quarterback situations where it isn't really clear, you know, if the rookie's going to start from the jump. I think of like J.J. McCarthy, Drake May. Obviously, we know Michael Penix Jr. is not going to start from the jump, but I don't think that's the case here in Denver. Like, when you look at the depth chart, they're thin. Yes, Jared Stidham's there. Don't give me that crap. Yes, they traded for Zach Wilson. Get excited, everybody. But really, Bo Nix doesn't have much competition. And when you think of Bo Nix, if you really don't know that much about him, I mean, it felt like he was around forever in college because he was around forever in college. This dude played 5 years. He was a five-year starter. He started 61 games. Like, no quarterback has ever entered the NFL having started more games at the college level. Now, there's somebody who's right behind him. It's Sam Hartman. He had 60 starts. But yeah, Bo Nix a little bit better than Sam Hartman. And actually, the last 2 years in Oregon, I thought he was pretty stinking good. You know, it's interesting. Like, sometimes I'll talk to people about Bo Nix, and they're like, oh, yeah, but he's undersized. And it's like, not really. He's 6'2", 217. Like, isn't that like basically round about the same size as Patrick Mahomes? Like, he's not as undersized as people make him out to be. And maybe it is because, well, the player I actually comped him to, ironically enough, was Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson is undersized compared to Bo Nix. Maybe that's why. I'm not quite sure why, but hey, he's bigger than you realize. Now, he is 24 years old coming in, but a lot of that experience and that age is going to be to his advantage. He has a lot of reps. And I will tell you, every year I'm trying to get better at this thing. I know I have a lot of deficiencies as an analyst, and I'm always trying to improve in those areas. And part of it is in player evaluation. And there's another player in the NFL right now who taught me to not underestimate the importance of experience, reps, being a starter for an extended period of time at the college level. And that player is Brock Purdy. Now, a little bit different. Bo Nix is drafted 12th overall. Brock Purdy was the last pick in the draft. So obviously there's that. But in my evaluation, when I'm looking at quarterbacks, I am looking at how many starts have they had? How much experience do they have? Nobody's ever had more experience than Bo Nix. So he should step in, you know, and maybe out of all of them, he's the most ready to be a starter. He doesn't have as high a ceiling as Daniels, as Caleb Williams, as Drake May. But he is very ready to start. So you have that. Last year, 45 passing scores. He had 3 interceptions. Like, all right, raw numbers are raw numbers at the college level, and they can get juiced up or whatever. But that shows you really clean with the football. He was second in the nation in passing yards with 4,508. It was a great season all around. I think things are interesting here, and I've actually been scooping up Bo Nix in Superflex as my third quarterback, and definitely been scooping him up in best ball, but I don't mind him as a third quarterback. You'll get him pretty cheap in super flex, and there's no denying he'll have a ceiling here, but you know, he's a rookie, so we know the floor is low as well. However, he won't have Jerry Jeudy. I just mentioned that. So here's what he's looking at in terms of wide receivers. You have Cortland Sutton, you have Marvin Mims. We could see Troy Franklin, maybe Josh Reynolds. I mean, maybe Timmy Patrick. I love Tim Patrick, but you know, seemingly can't stay healthy. As of right now, I would say you're most likely, at least to start the season, going to see Sutton, Reynolds, and Mims. Seems likely, but I don't think it's going to take long for Troy Franklin. And I'll talk about him in a minute, but let's leave with Cortland Sutton. So Cortland Sutton, what do we need to know about him? He may hold out or hold in. He's pushing for a new deal, and I don't think he's wrong to do so. You know, and I'm not one, if you've listened to me for a long time, you know, I'm not going to blame these guys for trying to get paid. Like, that always cracks me up when people are like, oh, he's just in it for the money. It's like, bro, what do you do for a living? Like, when you didn't get a raise that last time, how'd you feel about it, right? Like, we, of course they're in it for the money. This is their profession. So he's in the final year of guaranteed money on his contract. He does have one more year left, but no guaranteed money beyond that. And really, we're at a pivotal phase of his career because he's 29 years old. Now, that might be my, you know, that's my dynasty criteria point where I want to start looking to trade guys away in dynasty leagues at wide receiver. But I would say he's not over the hill for the Denver Broncos if they decide to extend him. Let's say they give him, you know, two more years of guaranteed money. I don't think that would be the worst deal for them, honestly. I actually think that would be pretty smart for them. So maybe they get something done, because now that they moved on from Jeudy, they don't really have that type of player, that X receiver. And not that Jeudy was that, but or like, you know, your sort of alpha number one target other than Sutton. And he still has some meat on the bone. I mean, he's coming off a very good season, you know. Now, granted, it was with Russell Wilson, but 10 touchdowns, 59 catches, whatever, but 10 touchdowns. How about this? All 10 of them came on end zone targets. He had 15 end zone targets. That was tied for sixth in the league. He was one of just two players to notch double-digit touchdowns on end zone targets. So that's good, having that red zone presence there. As far as, like, ranking him out, I mean, we're obviously not going to be super bullish here because there are questions when you have a rookie quarterback who, you know, anytime, even if it's a premium rookie quarterback, you're going to have questions. But there are more questions about Bo Nix than there are about Caleb Williams, obviously, or else Bo Nix would have went first overall, right? So where are we drafting Cortland Sutton? Is he worth it? I have him ranked at 42 overall. So conservative, he's outside of wide receiver three territory, but acknowledging that there is a ceiling, and I'm not that far off from ADP. He's at 47, and, you know, so maybe I'm like a half round ahead, you know, nothing dramatic here. So we're talking like eighth round, ninth round, somewhere in that range is where we're typically seeing him go. It seems like eighth is where he'll settle out. Marvin Mims, I have a wide receiver 64. Now, he has definitely has some pop, but he was so lightly used last year. He only saw 33 targets. You know, however, 34% of them went at least 20 air yards. So we're talking big time downfield presence here. 14.6 air yards per target. I'll tell you, Bo Nix is not afraid to push the ball vertically, so I don't think that's going to be a problem here. And Mims will, you know, last year he was primarily on the perimeter. So that's the question, is like, who plays the slot for the team this year primarily? You would think maybe Mims has a shot to do that. I don't think it's Josh Reynolds, but possibly. Reynolds wouldn't be fantasy viable. So the only other guy who has fantasy viability out of these wideouts, and I don't think it happens in the beginning of the season, is Troy Franklin. Now, from a stylistic standpoint, I comped him to DeVonta Smith. He's not of that caliber. Like, DeVonta Smith was a former Heisman Trophy winner. He was a first-round pick. Troy Franklin, he lasted in the draft. He fell a lot. He fell pretty far. So what do we know? What do we need to know? I mean, he was a fourth-round pick, by the way. He fell to day three. He scored a bunch of touchdowns. You know, he scored 23 over the last two seasons. Only Marvin Harrison Jr. had more in the FBS. He can get downfield and make plays on the ball. 14 catches on 24 targets of 20-plus air yards last year. Seven of them going for touchdowns. And really efficient. 3.55 yards per route run. The big knock on him is, like Devontae Smith, he's lean. He's 6'3", 180. So he's very thin. Against NFL caliber coverage, the strength of those guys, that's where he could have some challenges. And that's the thing that also would separate him from Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith is thin. You know, they call him skinny Batman, but he plays much stronger. His play strength is way stronger than you think it is. I don't know if we're going to see that out of Troy Franklin, at least initially, but it is worth monitoring. And I honestly can't explain why he fell that far. There was one point early in the draft process where I thought he could be a first round selection. I ultimately had him with a second round grade. Now I'm just some ding dong with a podcast, but I wasn't the only one that was surprised that he fell. I love the landing spot though, because he has the existing chemistry with Knicks. All right. Oh, tight end. I'm not worried about Greg Dulcich right now. If Dulcich hits, great, but he's a watchlist guy. Let's talk about running back, because this backfield is a bit of a mess. You have Javonte Williams, who last year averaged 3.6 yards per carry, 2.71 yards after contact per attempt. Those are lackluster numbers. But he was also coming off of a torn ACL, and he's a year removed from that. He's only 24 years old, and we often don't see these guys perform well the first year. We see them, if they are going to get it back, it's that second year back from the ACL that they really take off. But that is not an endorsement of him, because we have some other dynamics here. We also have... in the backfield, Samaje Perine is there. They drafted Audric Estime, and they have Jaleel McLaughlin. So we should sort of maybe go bit by bit here. Javonte Williams, first and foremost. It does seem like he's still the lead back. Even though the productivity wasn't where it needed to be last year, we've even heard from Sean Payton in the offseason. He said as much. Like, he said that he expects him to take a step forward. So I have a conservative ranking on Javonte Williams of RB30. And it's in line with where he is going in fantasy drafts. It's identical. He's going RB30. So that's current ADP on him. What does that mean? It means he's going to be a guy who slips out of the RB dead zone period. And if you're a zero RB or hero RB drafter, he's going to be there. You know, he's a possibility. Am I going to hesitate? Hell no. I don't think he's going to hit necessarily, but I am going to acknowledge there's a chance he does. There's a chance he outplays his ADP, and there's a chance he potentially even dramatically outplays his ADP. So for me, that's an ideal type of option in that range. But again, he's going in this range for a reason. Now, is there anybody who will challenge him? I don't think necessarily, though. Samaje Perine, even though he's like a bigger body back, I think he's a really good pass catcher. So he could eat in a little there, although Williams did have 47 catches last year. He could also potentially get some goal line work. Williams only had 8 goal line carries in 16 games. So there's some of that. I don't know how much of Estime we see this year, but this is a thing to keep an eye on in the future. Estime is also big, 5'11", 227. He is not fast, but he plays with power. He was actually quite good at Notre Dame. You know, really, last year, 4.27 yards after contact per attempt. You know, he can get in there in the goal line region, score touchdowns. He is banged up, though, right now and entering the season. So I don't think we'll see much of him this year. But with Samaje Perine in the last year of his deal, I think Estime is his replacement. Jaleel McLaughlin is kind of the sexy option in this backfield. But my concern here is, the dude's 5'7", 187. You're not giving a guy who's 5'7", 187 more than like 10 to 12 touches. You're just not. It's unprecedented. It's not going to happen in the NFL. It might happen in the college level, sure, but it doesn't happen in the NFL. If you don't have a bigger workload, you have to have just off the charts efficiency to produce. And we did see that. He did it for a little bit last year. But I'm telling you, nobody's going to sustain that. And it shows over the history of the NFL, when you're way off the grid in terms of efficiency, like you're extremely efficient, eventually your efficiency comes back, you know, to the mean. So I just don't see enough touches there for Jaleel McLaughlin. Better football asset than a fantasy football asset. So it is worth at least tossing a dart at Javonte Williams in that middle round range, realizing you may miss, but it is at least worth it. All right, let's move over to Detroit. Obviously, a very fun team. People love themselves, the Detroit Lions, right now, and that's great for the fan base, but it's also been great for fantasy purposes. You have Jared Goff at the helm, coming off a 30-touchdown season where he went for 4,574 yards. He has a fleet of weapons, which we'll get into in a moment here. Those numbers are really good. You know, like, this is Jared Goff doing it. Now, the one thing is Jared Goff is a statue. Like, he's a throwback in that regard. Last year, he had 21 rushing yards total. That's like a half for Anthony Richardson or like Lamar. But he had 21 total. But over the course of his career, he's shown a ceiling, man, like a high ceiling. He had, that actually wasn't his best passing season. His best passing season was 2018, 4,688 yards, 32 passing touchdowns for the Rams. So he's done it more than once where he's top 30 passing touchdowns, top 4,500 yards. I don't hate Jared Goff in fantasy. Like, it's not sexy. If you walk up, you put Jared Goff's sticker on the board, nobody, and I'm telling you, nobody's going to be like, yo, nice pick, bro. Like, nobody's, oh, you sniped me. Nobody's saying that. In fact, you might even get a look of pity here or there, but whatever. Nice pick, bro, doesn't win you a fantasy league. It doesn't. So how do I think of, like, where am I drafting him? How does he fit into strategy? It's pretty easy for me. So I'm ranking Jared Goff right now, quarterback 17. There's a cluster in there. But if you check out my tiers article over at ftnfantasy.com, and by the way, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. You want to get in on that before it goes away. That works for Fantasy Plus. It works for Fantasy Core. Any of our subscriptions there, if you want to get in here. But my tiers article is free. You can go check it out. I have Jared Goff in what I'm calling the late round safe tier. So this is a group of guys who, they don't necessarily have the highest ceiling, but they come with a pretty good floor so that you can draft one of those guys and one upside guy in the late rounds in one quarterback leagues and try and swing for the fences with like Caleb or Jaden Daniels or something like that. And if you miss, then you have Jared Goff to tide you over, try and work waivers and maybe find a different high ceiling guy, right? I don't hate that at all. I don't hate it at all. And in Superflex, I'll tell you what, I love Jared Goff. I don't need Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes to win in Superflex. Like, I can keep up with my opponents by waiting at the position and grabbing one of these guys. Like, I actually grabbed two of these. Like, I call it the basic bro approach. I would love like a Brock Purdy, Jared Goff combination would be pretty fun. Or, you know, heck, even if it's Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford or whatever. I don't even really care. I want higher floor guys at the position. So I set a nice floor at quarterback, and then my receiving core and my running backs and whoever I have a tight end, that's where I get my ceiling with my roster. I don't mind that at all. I'm not going to get into more of that strategy today, but if you're like brand new to the podcast or you're kind of brand new to me in general, I'm going to do that in August. You know, I want to set the stage with all of the teams first, and then we'll get into the strategy stuff. So yeah, Goff's in a great spot because he has Amon-Ra. He has Laporta. He has Jahmyr Gibbs, an excellent pass catching back. He showed it in his rookie season. And then there's like these other elements here. I mean, the main other element would be Jameson Williams. Do we finally take the darn training wheels off? As I just mentioned, you know, Josh Reynolds is out of the mix. So is this finally time? Year three, do we take them off? They do have Donovan Peoples-Jones. They have Khalif Raymond there too. But really, it's Jameson Williams. Like, that'd be the area where we maybe the complaint about Jared Goff, the one complaint that I have, doesn't push the ball vertically. Also doesn't throw the end zone a lot, by the way. But I'm not worried about that because you got Amon-Ra. You got yards after catch guys as well. So I'm not really overly concerned there. But still, Jared Goff doesn't push the ball vertically. Is this the year where that happens? Could be, because you got a guy who can be vertical. Jameson Williams is one of the fastest guys in the league. Last year, one of just two wideouts to top 22 miles per hour on a route. Hit a max of 22.07 miles per hour, top 20 miles an hour, 10 different times on routes. Led all players with an average route speed of 15.74 miles per hour. That's faster than Tyreek Hill's average speed. Like, Williams is blazing fast. And, like, we saw his role slowly ramp up last year after he came back. Remember, he had the sports betting suspension that ended up actually getting reduced. And, it, like, he wasn't betting on football. He just was dumb, and he opened his app up on the team facilities. He's actually, like, he could bet on other sports. You're totally allowed to do that as long as it's in a legal state. In the NFL, you just can't bet on team facilities. Like, you can't use the app while you're, you know, in the weight room or what have you. So anyway, I'll get to Amon-Ra, but let me tie a bow on Williams. I have him at wide receiver 48. Actually, I kind of like that range for him because, like, if I'm drafting guys in this range, so you're talking wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 types. So outside of the top 36 to 48 is a wide receiver 4. Then you go from 49 to 60, and that's a wide receiver 5 because he divided up in 12s. So he's like right on that back end of the wide receiver 4s. I want as much of a ceiling as possible. Like, I don't want an Adam Thielen in this range because Adam Thielen doesn't have a high ceiling. If I'm going to draft a receiver in this range, I want as high a ceiling as possible. So I have him at 48. He's going wide receiver 49. That's where you can expect to get him. That's like round 9, basically, like the latter part of round 9. I don't mind that at all. I'm usually drafting running backs in that range, but you know, if you're somebody you like to grab, you know, some upside, some juice right here before you get into the late rounds, he's a guy to look at. Amon-Ra is awesome. We know that. And the profile of him in this receiver series is really cool on Netflix. If you haven't watched it, it's really good. You get a sense of how tough this dude is. Coming off a 1,500-yard season where he had 119 catches and 10 touchdowns. Like, he's so stinking good. His 2022 season was awesome. And he blew it out of the water last year from a productivity standpoint. Now, we do think of him primarily as a slot receiver, but he did spend 44% of his routes on the perimeter last year, so he moves all around the formation. He can run after catch. He's super efficient. He's tough. I mean, he tied with Jaylen Waddle on yards per route run, 2.63 last year. That's awesome. Like, everything. The one thing I would say is that, you know, my one complaint is the air yards aren't high, but that would be more of a complaint if he didn't go for 1,500 yards and 119 catches. Like, if he had like 80 catches at 7.7 air yards per target, I would complain a little, not much. But I'd say he doesn't have a high ceiling, but we know St. Brown does. We know he has an enormous ceiling. He is basically Cooper Kupp. You know, Jared Goff had Cooper Kupp in Los Angeles, and like Amon-Ra is basically that here. Like, he's so stinking good. So if you want Amon-Ra, where do you have to draft him? Well, you kind of have to be in the back half of the first round. He's going 8th overall, wide receiver 5 right now in ADP. I have him at wide receiver 5 as well. So you have to be like right in that range or you're not going to get him. You know, you're not going to get him. Otherwise, I'm not going to get into Peoples Jones or Khalif Raymond. So the other main pass catcher before we get over to the backfield is Sam Laporta. I mean, holy crap. Holy crap. 86 catches out of this dude. 86. That is now the NFL's rookie record for tight ends. The previous record was set in 1988. Keith Jackson had 81 in 1988. So quite a record to break. And especially because, you know, when we think of the focus last year, the focus was Dalton Kincaid, maybe Michael Mayer. Laporta wasn't the biggest focus. Now, I don't want to say this came out of nowhere because people were drafting Laporta. I was at the Fantasy Football Expo last year in Canton, and like I was on a panel with Andy Behrens was on the panel from Yahoo. You probably know him. And if you don't, how do you not know who Andy Behrens is? Anyway, I digress. So Andy, all he kept saying is like, give me all the Sam Laporta. So he nailed that one. You know, you get him in the late rounds and then boom, goes the dynamite. But the problem, you're not drafting him in the late rounds this year. And not only that, you're drafting him as the first tight end off the board at pick 26 overall. So he is spilling into round 3. I honestly think that it's going to settle out in round 2. I think somebody's going to draft him in round 2 this year in your home leagues in one quarterback format, which is just a little too rich for my blood. It is. I'll get him in best ball. I have plenty of shares of him in best ball. But my approach is to wait until you get, like this year, It's really 5, 6, 7, 8, though not all my guys, it doesn't always happen that my guys spill into round 8. So usually it's like 5, 6, 7 is really where my tight end drafting happens in one quarterback formats. But either way, I love watching him play. And if you had Goff, you indirectly get a piece of Laporta if you don't end up drafting him. I'm not going to talk you out of drafting him, by the way. If you want to draft him, just realize you're probably going to have to do it in the late second round if you really want to get this dude. All right, let's move over to the backfield. So we saw Jahmyr Gibbs step in, and we saw David Montgomery step in. And they replaced, Montgomery replaced Jamal Williams, and Jahmyr Gibbs replaced DeAndre Swift. Similar stylistically for both of them. And initially, it looked like last year was going to be that same relationship where, oh, man, Jamal Williams gets all the work and DeAndre Swift gets none of it. Oh, man, Montgomery's going to get all the work and Gibbs is going to get, well, it didn't end up working out that way. Monty getting hurt certainly helped it out a little bit. And Monty was great. 19 goal line carries, 13 rushing touchdowns. Like, that was a career high in rushing touchdowns. I converted 9 of his 19 for touchdowns as well. He was able to create after contact. It was the first time he topped 3 yards after contact per attempt since his rookie season. He had 3.05. Also runs of, oh no, that was his second season. I digress. It was his second season. He was over 3.0. But anyway, career high in runs of 15 plus yards. He only had 8. It wasn't like he led the league, but still 8's pretty good. His previous career best was 7 in 2021. So Monty, very good. But when he got hurt, we saw Jahmyr Gibbs could actually be a 3-down guy. Like, he's not the biggest dude, but he's also not tiny. He's not like Jaleel McLaughlin. He's 5'9", 200 pounds. It's like really borderline, but at least he's at 200 pounds. Monty's much bigger, 5'11", 224. But man, with Gibbs, it's the explosive ability. He just gives me those Alvin Kamara vibes, right? 15 runs of 15-plus yards. Only Christian McCaffrey and Derrick Henry had more. In the passing game, one of just 14 running backs to top 50 receptions. He was tied for 9th at the position with 52. Can we see the touch volume increase a little bit for him and decrease a little bit for Montgomery? Is it still going to be close to a 50-50 split? I don't have those answers, but I am giving the edge to Jahmyr Gibbs. And if you want Jahmyr Gibbs, you're going to have to draft him basically at the end of the first, beginning of the second round. He is going 13 overall. That puts him at RB5 right now. And I mean, it's totally fair. In terms of my rankings, I am at RB5. It's totally fair. Now, if you get Gibbs, like if it's a redraft league and I draft Gibbs, David Montgomery is not his handcuff. If Gibbs went down, yes, Montgomery would get like most of the work. The depth chart, they've done a good job of keeping, like, you know, some depth here. Like, they have Craig Reynolds. They brought in Bam Knight. They have Sione Vaki, who they took in the 4th round. They have Jamar Jefferson. So there's some depth here. But Monty would get most of the work, but he's not a handcuff. Like, you don't, your handcuff isn't RB19. That's called a timeshare. And it is a timeshare situation. So if I draft Gibbs, I'm not drafting Monty. And I'll tell you, like, redraft-wise, why this also makes sense. Here's what often happens if you have situations like that in redraft. You will, let's say you start Gibbs this week and Montgomery goes off. All right, you're going to bang your head against the wall a little bit, but maybe the first time it's okay. Then next week, you're like, all right, I'm going to do it. You talk yourself into starting Monty and sitting Gibbs. Guess who goes off that week? It's not Montgomery, right? It causes a lot of frustration. And a frustrated fantasy manager is a bad fantasy manager. Like, they're going to make bad decisions. They're going to make worse decisions than if they're enjoying their time, having fun with it. And so if we can do things to avoid frustration, then why not? You know, not drafting both of those guys is one of those ways. Like, don't say, oh, I locked up the Lions backfield, because that's not what you did. You created a situation where you're going to have to make an additional decision probably every week. Like, at least right now, people would be like, duh, Jeff, you're definitely starting Gibbs. Are you? Yeah, week one, sure. But what about week two? Like, if Monty goes off in week one, which is viable, could very well happen, all of a sudden the landscape changes. So I try to avoid those things. I will tell you, though, Monty offers better value. If he falls out of the dead zone, if you're talking David Montgomery in the set, to you, what is better value? Jahmyr Gibbs early second, David Montgomery seventh. And he's going RB21. I'm two spots ahead on ADP. And he is going in the seventh round. Now, obviously, you don't have the juice with Montgomery that you have with Jahmyr Gibbs. And that's fine. You don't necessarily need the juice. You have double-digit potential. And, you know, we know that he has double-digit touchdown potential because he already did it. He's not going to catch a lot of balls. He had 16 catches in 14 games last year. But I am looking at the potential for, as you know, really as many touchdowns as I can get out of this dude. And I don't mind taking him in the seventh round. So he actually offers slightly better value than Gibbs, though. Come on, we know Gibbs, like, he's a stud. He's so good. He's so explosive. So obviously I still love him. It's just the value is better on Monty. All right, so that'll wrap up the Lions. When I come back on Monday, I'll do the Packers and the Texans. Two very interesting teams there. The Packers, that wide receiver situation is fascinating. The Texans are so stinking loaded. So that's going to be fun to talk about there. But here, I want to get into a couple of these emails. And if you want to email me, I set up an email for the show. It's therantpodjr@gmail.com. And then also, if you want to call into the voicemail, we've had a couple callers. I actually played them in the last two episodes. The number is 215-720-1708. It doesn't have to be questions. Like, if you want to call in and do a bit, like, I'm going to leave that open, by the way, during the season. And we're going to leave it as like a reaction. Like, you can call in and just be like, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs sucks or whatever. Like, now everybody's going to do that. He does not suck, by the way. But you could do that during the games, like if you get really frustrated. And then on like Monday's pods, we'll do a little montage of the voicemails. But anyway, 215-720-1708. It's just a voicemail line that you can call into. If you want to email, though, therantpodjr@gmail.com. So Dan checked in. And he's just saying, this is Dan H. He said, congrats on the Rant Pod ownership. It's nice to have you back. I really didn't go anywhere. It's just I couldn't get the message out there, by the way, that I was doing the FTN Fantasy podcast. So a lot of people like just missed that. Anyway, he said, thanks for all you do. You're welcome. I'm happy to be here. And he said he's ready for another great season. So just checking in. Keith is asking about auction drafts. Also saying he's glad the Rant is back. Said he's an FTN subscriber. Appreciate you. You can also be an FTN subscriber. Promo code RATPACK for 10% off. But he said, I know you said you do more draft strategy podcasts in August. So when you do, could you do one on auction leagues that allow keepers? Auctions are tricky. I feel like there are multiple ways to attack them, but I want to hear your perspective on it. Yeah, no problem. Now, keeper strategy in auction is really simple. I'm just going to compare my keeper value of whatever player to my market value for those players. So like when I have auction values on FTN, those are my market values and I want to save money. So like, let's say I'm able to keep a player who I spent $21 on last year and my market value for that player is 35 now. Okay, great. I just saved $14. Now, I'm not saying he's going to go at $35, but that's how I'm valuing him. So it's just like if I was going to a store and I had in my mind, you know, that I would pay $5 for something and I go to the store and it's $4. I'm like, well, hell yeah, I'll save a dollar. I'm cheap. I'll save that darn dollar. Yeah, I love that. So, yeah, but we're going to do a whole podcast on auction strategy. Dan G checking in, and he said, this is the guy who I think he emailed yesterday and was asking about how I draft quarterbacks in the late rounds. So he wants a little bit further. It's a follow-up question. He said, specific league question. He has the sixth pick in a league. I don't know how many teams there are. He doesn't say how many teams. I'm going to assume 12. He said, there's definitely an emphasis on drafting running backs early. He said, assuming the top tier running backs, so that's McCaffrey, Bijan, and Breece are off the board when he picks, do I have a preference on the next tier of running backs? Well, no, that's not how I would draft in this league. He said, I like Gibbs, but he's concerned about his size. And yeah, I just mentioned that about Gibbs. Like, yeah, that's a little bit of a concern. But I think we're really missing the point. Okay, so if you pick six overall, let's look at what the range of outcomes is in that spot. Right now, you're saying those three running backs would be off the board. All right. So as of right now, I think that makes sense, although I don't think it's those three running backs. He said it's a non-PPR format. I have my non-PPR rankings up over at ftnfantasy.com. Here's my top six in that format. McCaffrey, Tyreek, CeeDee Lamb, Bijan, Jonathan Taylor, because of the volume he sees in the run game, Ja'Marr Chase. So if I have the option there, if I'm at six, I'm going to take whoever is the top guy on my board. Now, you may have Jonathan Taylor. If you don't have Jonathan Taylor as your number three running back, then fine. Your number three running back goes before Ja'Marr Chase. I take Ja'Marr Chase. So here's the short answer. I'm not specifically taking a player. I'm not saying it has to be Ja'Marr Chase or it has to be Barkley or it has to be Jonathan Taylor. What I'm saying is in round one, I have a board set up. And I'm going to cross players off as they come off. So if Christian McCaffrey goes first overall, boom, I cross him off. And I can't pick him any longer. When I am up at six, I'm taking the top guy on my board. Whoever's name is the highest that isn't crossed off, that's who I'm selecting. So I'm not going to lock in on a player just yet. I won't really know until I'm up. But that's why we do the prep work now. And that's why we prepare, knowing the players, knowing the strategies, all that fun stuff. So hopefully that answers your question. And yeah, this is cool. I like that you guys have been emailing in. Let's keep that up. If you have questions, comments, anything, hit me up, therantpodjr@gmail.com. Remember, follow along with me on Twitter at Jeff Ratcliffe and on Instagram at Jeff Ratcliffe. You can also go check out ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. And I'll be off until Monday. So in the meantime, do me a favor, review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. That really, really helps me out. Otherwise, enjoy the weekend. I'll catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out.